This meeting is now being recorded.
Well, I'd like to welcome everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Subteam Track 4 IDN's Technical and Operations Call on the 12th of February, 2018. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken via the Adobe Connect room. So if you're only on the audio bridge today, would you please let yourself be known now? Hearing no names, I'd like to remind everyone to please state your name before speaking for recording purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will turn the meeting back over to Cheryl Langdon-Orr and Ruben Skuhl.
Thank you, Cheryl. Cheryl Langdon-Orr for the record, and welcome everybody to the 24th meeting on Subsequent Procedure, Work Track 4, IDN Technical Operations, and it's 1,500 UTC on the 12th of February. Starting with the administrator, as we always do, I'd like to ask if there is anybody who needs to update their statements of interest. No. Hearing anyone and not seeing anyone in the Adobe Connect room raise their hand, we will assume that nothing exciting and thrill-packed has happened to any of us in terms of our employment. And we will now move on. Michelle, if we could progress the slide, please, and perhaps we could... thanks very much. Now I'll ask for everybody... if there is anyone who would like to make any suggestions on our agenda in terms of any other business, today's agenda is relatively short, but fairly sweet in terms of its length. We're intending to continue a discussion of financial evaluation today. And if there's anybody who has any other business that they would like to raise now, let us know, and we will ask again before the end of the call. Alan, did I see your hand in, or was that just the mic flicking on and off? Must have been the microphone. Okay, nobody has any suggestions for the agenda. Let's progress the slide again and move from financial onto our... keep going, and again. That looks like it'll be... One, there we go. And we'll now hand back over to Rubens and get into the discussion, continuing discussion on financial evaluations. Over to you, Rubens.
Thank you, Cheryl. Good time of day, everyone. This is an aspect that is not related to IDN or technical. This is an aspect that's linked to our the operational side of Work Track 4, which is financial evaluation. We had since the last round a policy recommendation that applicants must be able to demonstrate the financial and operational capability. And doesn't seem that we are willing to change that recommendation. So the question is how we look into this. The slides describe how it went in 2012. This is a repetition slide of what we already seen. So if we can move to the next slide, please. What we have discussed so far were four financial evaluation models that were proposed. One that was very simple, the straw machine, which simply had no financial evaluation whatsoever. And growing complexity, we had what we call the straw B, that looked in financial where retails, but not business model or financial fitness. Next in line is somewhat more complex, the straw beetle, which relies of a bit in self or third-party certification, but still wouldn't look into business model. And the last model was this straw cookie monster, which included a comprehensive evaluation of business model and applicant financials. And the news, the horrific news I had for you all, if you can move to the next slide, please, is that you implode everything. Say, hey, nice, we took all those models. These models were part of our path towards getting to a consensus point of view. But let's start from scratch using what we learned in this path. What was noted that was little support for both the extremes model, both the straw machine, the simpler one, and the straw cookie monster, the not-so-simple one. There were some defenders of each of those two models, and taking my co-chair hat off, new included in the straw machine, but those seem to have failed to get traction within the work track. What we notice is that the intermediary models could possibly get traction and get to consensus with some simplification and some addition. So we looked into what was discussed, mostly chat transcripts, and we tried to bake out what something was like a middle ground. So the model name is actually a word joke with middle ground, but it's not consensus grade yet. It's just an interpretation of what seemed to be able to achieve consensus. So let's see if that holds or not. So if you can move to the next slide. We named it the Middleworth model, joking with middle ground, but referencing some fictitious universes we like. And this model came with five criteria. Criteria one was that the applicant would identify if the proposed financials apply to all its applications, a subset of them, or a single one. That means if someone applies to, let's say, two TLDs, and they say, no, I will share these organizational resources among those two TLDs. And so that could be identified in that response. Say, hey, this applies to X and X application. Or not, if an applicant had, for instance, one proposal where the applicant would get venture capital fund and be extremely well funded, but only for that string and not the others, that could also be identified by the applicant. So it allows an applicant to have the simplest evaluation of one response applying to all TLDs, if that's the case, or allowing discretion to the applicant to say, no, it's not that simple. I have a somewhat more nuanced financial that would be evaluated. Criteria tools that I can wouldn't provide any kind of financial models or tools. This is something that got some reaction from WorkTrack members. So instead of even providing sample spreadsheets or something, they wouldn't provide any such thing. They would only provide defined goals. Say, hey, you must work toward these goals, and we go through the goals in other criteria. But then it would let applicants with no one to ask. So one possibility would would be for Artem to list registry service provider and consultants that could both say, hey, running registry costs this amount of money, or consultants that could, hey, you need to think of this expenditure, that other cost over there. One problem that comes with this, and I noticed that I think we don't have icons. No, we have icon staff here in the meeting, so they might want to talk about this, is how to shield icon from liability. Let's say that icon has a list of consultants, and someone asks for advice and ends up getting bad advice. So would that create liability? How to shield icon from that? One possibility to do that shielding would be to, instead of referring to consultants, refer to already established groups, like the registry stakeholder group, the GHLD group, the brand registry group, and those groups would decide if they want, hey, oh, the average cost of running a registry is that, the a sample model, financial model would be like this, or elaborate a list of consultants they, that have support of their members. But that would be one possibility of shielding ICANN from such a problem, to pass that part of possible orientation to already established stakeholder groups, constituencies, and other organizer groups within ICANN. Criteria three would be the actual goals that would be that an applicant should strive for, that they would need to demonstrate financial wherewithal, saying, hey, I exist, I'm capable of assuming responsibilities, I'm capable of signing a contract. So an applicant would need to be able to show that it can sign up a contract that doesn't preclude ICANN from further evaluating that applicant, but at least in all very likelihood that applicant would be able to sign a contract. But he would also need to assure the community, not only ICANN, of long-term survivability of the registry, considering stress conditions like not achieving revenue goals, exceeding expenses, funding shortfalls, applying to too many TLDs and then having to share its finite resources among those TLDs, or possibly one that occurred to me now, expending too much money on contention set resolution to acquire the desired TLDs into a level that ends up not allowing that applicant to have money for other expenditures like marketing, etc. The goals would be homogeneous in criteria. So, say, you need to put these goals. But, of course, each applicant would implement them differently. One of the main factors that would make them different would be the revenue dependence of the TLD, which could be high in a commercial TLD, like an open TLD that needs revenue to be alive, or in the other extreme, it would be none, like in a brand TLD, where the TLD is a cost center and not a revenue-generating business line. So it would be fairly independent from revenue. But that would be up to the applicant. The goals would be homogeneous, established, and all applications would have to live by them. Criteria four, if an officer of the company is bound in the applicant jurisdiction by some level of professional duties to represent financials correctly, for instance, an accountant that is licensed to practice CPA in U.S. and Australia and other jurisdictions with British heritage, that certification from that professional would count for say, hey, I did apply and I am sure that we are survivable in the long term considering the criteria goals expressed over there. That would be one option. The other option, applicants are publicly listed companies. Publicly listed companies are usually operate under a higher level of corporate governance. They have stockholders oversight. They have regulator authorities oversight. So they usually already fall into a corporate level that's pretty high. But that would limit it to somewhat large and stock exchanges. At least $2,000 already had that criteria on that. That seemed effective in that regard. Or applicant is a current registered operator that hasn't defaulted on its payments to ICANN and hasn't triggered continued operational instrument. So the applicant is someone that is already been over some years operating, know the business, know how it costs, know how the system works, know how it goes over the years to keep a register alive. So in all those three cases, the applicants could self-certify that planning was made with those assurances. Say, hey, we have long-term survivability. But if neither those three conditions can be achieved, or for some reason an applicant prefer not to do it, they could provide credible third-party certification of those goals. No, that is not certification of those financial statements. It's of those goals of having long-term survivability. So it's a business plan analysis. But that wouldn't be done neither by ICANN, not by an ICANN contractor, by someone hired by the applicant itself that would say, hey, this is my... the assurance that my business plan are sound, they're solid, and they're sure long-term survivability of that registry, not of that company. So one option of long-term survivability is an exit plan. Like some TLDs have already been sold since the 2012 round, and that is as surviving as if the original company itself has survived, because the community interest in continuation of the registry is that whoever depends on that registry keeps relying on that. So that goal is achieved. So if you could move to the next slide. One thing that was originally created as a way to make easier to evaluate if this model goes along with the community goals was to create actual questions for that financial evaluation. So that's a mock-up of the questions, not saying that these are really the questions. But having those questions makes it easier for org track members to look at them and say, oh, this is something I would endorse, I would go along, or no, it's something that is different than what I believe should be done. So first question, this mock-up evaluation would be to identify whether the financial information is shared with another application. So that's the part when the applicant says, oh, this is shared pool of resources for applications X, Y, and Z. or not. This share the dedicated pool of resources for this specific application. Next question would be financial statements that would either need to be audited or certified by someone that met those criteria we mentioned in this last slide, that say, an officer of the company that has a professional duty in that application jurisdiction, or it's independently certified, or it's publicly listed, or it's from registered operator, it's currently a registered operator in good standing. That would have a 0 or 1 scoring, either fail or pass. And although the statements wouldn't be posted, the certification would be posted. So people could look and say, hey, that person was the one that certified this. Was that person knowledgeable enough for doing that? So this can be goes to public vetting of that certification. One gotcha, though, we need to be careful is that this requirement was one of the main sources of clarification questions and failed evaluations in the last round. The reason this requirement is here is that there was no support for removing them, so they are being kept here, but we need to pay attention that possibly doing implementation and how this can be better communicated so applicants don't fail that question. And perhaps making abundantly clear that, hey, if you don't provide financial statements, you fail, you won't get a contract. So if you are unwilling to provide financial statements, go away. Don't apply for a TLD because it's a requirement. But that's something we need to be careful of because this was a pain point and we are not taking that pain point away. Next financial question would be for a declaration, either certified by an officer bound by application duties or independent certified or companies publicly listed or currently registered operator in good standing, that the TLD will survive. So this is only a declaration of that, not the modeling of that. That would also have a pass-fail grade only. And it will also be publicly posted. Say, hey, who said that this planning was good? Or if that TLD ends up failing, that document can be tracked and say, hey, you said it wasn't going to fail. Is there really something unpredictable that happened? Or was that really a business model over there? Or it was just someone that you, something that you signed off without reading? So that can be publicly vetted as well. So in this implementation, no financial models would be provided, asked for, or evaluated. And there also would be no COI. I tried to get attention of how work breakthrough is going on that, but it seems they are going toward this, that instead of having a continuous operations instrument, the value of the minimum number of domains COI equivalent, which I believe it was $18,000 in 2012, would be required along application fee. So that would be retained as deposit and that instrument be maintained with that. If that is kept by WorkTrack2 and the full work group, but if it's kept, it would, instead of relying on a banknote that was difficult to get, because mostly was ICANN requirements, actually violated money laundering directives from the banking industry. So there was a conflict there. So instead of asking banks to do what they can do, applicant would provide that money. If applicant doesn't get the contract, then it's part of the refund. So that would be the middle ground implementation based on most of the comments that were received, including what people would like to see and people wouldn't like to see. So this is a composite of everything we discussed so far. So any comments on it? Feedback, likes, dislikes, anything? Let's give people some time to think. I see Martin's typing. Maxim typed in the chat that audited financial statements of a new company gives almost no info beyond officers and address and starting balancing. He's right, but one of the discussions we had so far is exactly that we won't prevent startups from applying. So we need to take that into consideration and allow a bit less of information from new ventures. For instance, the registry with the most number of TLDs, most number of GTLDs, was actually a startup in 2012, and they raised money, applied, got hundreds of TLDs, and are operating just fine. So not having all that information is part of the questioning and allowing startups to join this endeavor instead of only allowing already established industry players. Martin asked whether the COI amount would prefer to be part of a payment once agreement is signed. That could be an option, but that would be somewhat different between what was used in 2012 of requiring something that actually gave that guarantee. So collecting the money to add application submission allows that to happen at application. So applicants already had something that would be then converted to the contract. So it's a possibility, but this one mimicked 2012 round more than allowing question. Phil said that 80% of CQs relate to question 50, not to question 46 on lack of submission of financial statements. Phil, lack of submission of financial statements was the number one reason for failing initial evaluation. So we had two sets of information that we looked at for. One was the ones from clarification questions. The other one was the question that failed in initial evaluation. And question 46 was the number one question for failing initial evaluation. So both were generators of trouble, of hazards among the process. And Martin has his hand up. Please go ahead, Martin.
Hi, Rubens. Thanks for that. Just following up on the COI comment you made, I understood on the previous round of applications the need to do the COI piece in terms of getting the bank to agree the letters of credit along with the application. But given what you've just talked us through with this mock-up, which I'm warm to, I think this has got legs to stand on. I think the COI element that could be taken as a payment by ICANN would be something that should be deferred to the signing of the agreement and ready for delegation, mainly because, you know, again, this is something that could take 2-3 years to process, as we've seen before. So I think it would be worthwhile just considering whether that is an element that could be parked to a later point or even spread across the regular payments that are made to ICANN, especially for those that are, you know, the smaller startup registries or brands that probably don't have as much risk to ICANN, because if they do decide to, it's no longer viable to maintain and operate a live TLD, they could potentially switch it out without having any registrant implications. So I think that there is an opportunity to think about, one, taking a lump sum as the agreement signed to go into the what would have been a COI element, or to think about spreading that cost out with the regular quarterly payments that are made to ICANN. Thanks, Rubens.
Thanks, Martin. On spreading the payment along the duration of the contract, that's something that we, that are discussing evaluation, can go into that. Perhaps contract two can discuss that. But even for the evaluation, both you and John expressed reservations on doing that at application submission time instead of contract signing time. So let's table that as a two possibilities of moving forward. But most of what we're discussing are disturbance of the actual other things of the evaluation. So we probably can leave that discussion for further time, and let's do a poll and including people on the list on that thing. Next, we have Krista. Please go ahead, Krista.
Thanks, Ruben. I know it's always hard to keep talking and not everyone else is joining, so maybe that help a little bit. I do like the proposed financials and taking an overall view of how many applications are submitted versus resources and pooling that all into, say, one financial model to be reviewed. We would still have to consider what would happen if they think they're going to win 50% of them versus 90%, and also perhaps the implications of that if they're deciding on what percentage would actually go to private, say, versus public auction. But regardless, I think pooling them all together is a really great thing. The other aspect that I like or to discuss here, because it seems to be a little bit confused, is that the review of the financial statements, and there's two types of them. One is a financial review and one is an audit. And the person's position when they go to do the review or the audit is to provide an opinion on those financial statements if they are represented correctly and they show the true position of the company. And they will look at generally a shorter time, so it would be 2 years. The downfall in our scenario is, you know, the applicant might say, we don't expect to launch for 2 years, in which case that little, you know, slice of timeline at the end is when they actually start to operate. But I think the process a company has to go through in order to get the financial sign-off on that actually is aligned with what you're saying, is people are going to go through this process. They're going to have to work with their auditor or the reviewer or the professional company to understand what the business is going to do, what, their volume is, every line item to ensure that they actually have given enough thought behind it. To going on to your other point on self-certification, I'm a little weary on that because I could sign off on a company, not taking my accountant's hat off. I could easily sign off at a company and I could be broke tomorrow and you can't pierce that corporate veil unless I went and did something that was illegal or something along those lines. So I don't think that would give us the same level of confidence that we would perhaps want. I understand for a big public company, but for, I could literally sign, do a company up tomorrow and sign off on it. So I think there's different degrees in there. But overall, I do think it has some legs and agree with that. And I'll skip the COI because I'm sure Work Track 2 has spent a lot of time on that. But just my own feedback for now. Thanks.
Thanks, Krista. Since we don't have any other hands up, let's go to the next slide and see what we can and should include in our initial report. What was found that even this middle ground model, it's from it you can actually implement the simpler models if wanted. So these are a tentative agreement criteria, but it's how the full work group prefers deleting some of those criteria, it actually end up becoming one of the other models, the straw beetle, straw beast, or if they delete everything, it becomes the straw machine. So this model, even though it's an attempt of tentative agreement, it also can be changed enough, tuned, fine-tuned to lesser details, to ask lesser details. But that's not what would happen with the straw cookie monster. And there is actually a charm between the two, that you can ask for more information than what's described in this middleware model and not accomplishing anything. But if you start getting not just a bit more of information, but a good number, a good amount more of information, then it comes the straw cookie monster model, which has its value, which has value analyzing a business model, not only the possible financials, and looking, will this TLD survive? Is the environment endearing for having revenue generating TLDs now that we already have a lot of TLDs? And one thing for us to remember is that we don't have yet all the open TLDs. There are hundreds of TLDs that haven't been launched. So if people find that the market is crowded right now, they haven't seen anything. So, but in order to address that, those concerns, that needs to have lots more of information, which is what Krista and Christopher started to detail in the straw cookie monster. So the idea is to have both in the report, including Krista's position paper on why we should look into more, even though most people didn't agree with her. But at least those are two options that are solid within themselves. And the idea is to include mock-up questions for each model. The reason for that is that since we are redoing financial evaluation from scratch, getting mock-up questions Is app making clear what is being sought of, being sought for, and ends up making easier for implementing exactly what the deciding work group and not something that reminded people what was in the work group. Maxim, even though you lowered your hand, I believe you have something to say, and please go ahead.
Maxim Alzoba, it's related to the previous slide. When we were talking about multiple application supported by same financial model, I wanted to add a side note saying that we need to be sure that the applicant can demonstrate his their ability to basically contract companies for bandwidth, hardware, software, manpower, because having proved that this company have everything contracted in advance is too harsh, because this round showed then basically registries bleeded money because of delays, and in a situation where the requirement would be to have everything contracted or bought or procured services in advance would be just too harsh and would throw small and medium companies out of business, actually. Thanks.
Thanks, Maxim. If you can go back to slide 10. Considering Max's point that we shouldn't ask for actual contracting at that time, only for capacity of contracting derived from the from that financials. What does people have any other considerations on those financial evaluation models? One thing to note is that we only can provide, in the case of Stock Cookie Monster, the models or mock-up questions if someone provides them to the work track. So if someone is willing to work on that, please do. And if someone doesn't come up with anything, that won't appear in the initial report, period. So the question of someone willing to write those questions. We have a comment in the chat from Trang, perhaps stating the obvious, there is a tie between continued operation instrument and the hedge systems provide the discussion. One of the approaches under discussion is that to have the RFP take over in cases of financial failure. If that's adopted, there will be no need for a COI. That's completely true, although we are work track for can't assume that for now. But so everything we're writing is if COI continues, then what should we do? And if it's done, it won't exist anymore. And many people would be pleased, including me, if that doesn't exist anymore. But we can take that for granted so far. We have to work as if it exists until it stops existing. Seeing all other comments, I will send our invite our co-chair Cheryl back for the reminder of our meeting. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rubens. I must say I am very amused with the graphics associated with today's slides. I particularly like the explosion back in the early slides, but I think at this point when we're coming into honing down what we may be able to put in the initial report, it's it's good to see a little smile, certainly on I trust most of our faces. So thanks for the extra work on today's slides, Deb Rubens. Really appreciate that. With that, I'm going to call for any other business. And if we can move to the next slide, please. And not hearing anybody or seeing anyone wave their hand in the Adobe Connect room. With that, I'm struggling to remember what the date and time is of our next meeting. So if staff can let us know, I think it should be the 2000 UTC time slot, but Emily or Julie or Steve, if you can just confirm our next meeting time. Gently silence. Everyone's looking it up. I assume I can be heard. Ah, thank you very much. Thanks, Steve. Yes. It is the 2000 UTC, and it's on March the 1st. So with that, taking a little less than our allocated time for today's call, Rubens and I would like to thank you one and all, and look forward to meeting and furthering our discussions at our next call. And with that, thank you. Thanks to our staff, and bye for now.
Thank you so much, everyone. Meeting has been adjourned. Have a great day.